live from the heart of Los Angeles, this is the online edition of the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright lights.
With tonight's guest, the Peace Troubadour, James F. Twyman.
Look at the night sky. Look at the night sky.
And performance guest, Bevan Manson. I am Mark Lejeune, and now our host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
I happen to be in the middle of, for all intents and purposes, a spring cleaning, but not really. I say not really because I don't have time for it, but I was compelled to start it, and now I find myself with a mess and a clutter, and it's worse than before I started. On the one hand, I wish I would have just left it alone. On the other hand, I was compelled to start it because I needed to. So here is the story that has ensued. And it's something that I've learned in this process. And it ties into our guest because I made a connection that I don't think I ever would have made until I read his book. So I remember how I used to really like spring cleaning when I was a kid. I used to help my mother with taking furniture out of rooms and moving them to one side of the room and things of that nature. And she would clean and all of that. And for a brief period, everything in that room and then every other room eventually throughout the week would be completely disorganized and it would be chaotic. And our childhood home was always very clean and very organized, or as organized as possible with having lots of kids and all. But so that chaos, I think it was kind of fun. I liked it. I thought it was, you know, how cool. Look, the bed's all the way over here when it's not supposed to be, kind of thing. Even though we would trip over things, we would hurt ourselves, we'd end up breaking things sometimes. And so sometimes not so nice and not so fun. But a brief moment of chaos. All right. But the situation I'm in is, as I started moving things around and not being able to get back to it and get it done in a day like my mother used to dedicate to it, or within the week like my mother used to dedicate to it, the chaos and the disruption to my life and the mess has extended more than a day, more than a week, more than 2 weeks. And I came to the realization after reading James Twyman's book and finishing it this morning, I never really liked the chaos. I mean, it was an interesting disruption, but I really liked what came after, because I was used to and I liked the organization, I liked the cleanliness, and I knew that on the other side of this disruption, of this chaos, there would be even more cleanliness and more organization than there had been before. But when the chaos and the disruption and the mess continues, then I've noticed myself liking it less, getting frustrated and getting tired and saying, when are we going to, when am I going to get to the other side of this? When's the happy part? Which I know what it's like because I've done it before and it's been making me happy before. So that being said, I'm looking for that. And in a way, my hope and trust is, and of course, those of you who are listening probably get that I'm correlating to what's happening in the world or what's been happening or in most of our lives and all of this, where I'm hoping and trusting, like this mess that I'm in the middle of quote unquote spring cleaning, that on the other side of it, I will be even happier than I've ever been after a spring cleaning, and potentially more things will be organized and there will be light at the end of this tunnel. And that light might not be just, if it's up to people like James Twyman, might not be just a cleaner world or a more organized world, but a more peaceful world. And I can't wait for that. And so on our way to that, I am so glad we are having this conversation. I'm so glad we made that connection, because in a sense, this extends the book in the how to not be polarized within ourselves. So the book and the title of our episode is How to Depolarize Your Family, Business, and the World. This is our episode 842 of the Life Changes Show. And we're featuring James Twyman, the peace troubadour, the Episcopalian Franciscan priest, the spiritual teacher, the internationally recognized peace activist, the author of 24 books, including two New York Times bestsellers, The Moses Code and The Barn Dance, and a musician whose hit I Am Wishes Fulfilled topped Billboard number one. So with that, welcome to the show, James Twyman.
It is so great to be here, and I loved your introduction. It was very poignant.
You inspired it. Thank you so much. Help me with my spring cleaning, James Twyman.
I think we're all going through a spring cleaning,
right?
Yeah, boy, it's messy. It's, I think, messier than any of us can remember. It doesn't seem like that long ago when we could disagree on different topics and not have it cost so much. Just because I don't agree with you on a given subject, I don't have to worry about you throwing me out of your life. But polarization that we are seeing in the world right now seems to be, well, is heading in that direction for many people.
And so that has inspired the book we're going to talk about in just a moment. And before we get into it, what inspired your interest in all of this, and where did it begin? Did it begin with you singing peace songs? Where did it begin?
That's a great question, because it's much more than just the book. So I'll start way back. First of all, as you mentioned, I am an Episcopal Franciscan, so I've always had a very deep connection to St. Francis of Assisi. And there's one story in particular that I've always loved about Francis. It was in 1219. He decided that he could end the Crusades if he traveled all the way to Egypt and went to the encampment of the great Sultan Al-Kamil, who was the leader of the entire Islamic world at that time, and just shared with him the love that he felt, the love that he wanted to share.
Oh, wow.
His life. And everyone told him he was crazy, of course, that he'd be martyred, but he was convinced. And sure enough, he was captured right away. He was sentenced to be killed, but the Sultan was really curious about this crazy friar that just walked right into the enemy camp, and he decided to give him the chance to share what he wanted to share. And the Sultan, who was actually a very deeply spiritual man himself, really resonated with everything he heard. Not only that, but the greatest Sufi master of that time was there with them, the Fakir el-Din el-Farisi. And Francis ended up staying there in the encampment for 2 weeks. He shared mainly with the Fakir, and they learned about their religions, Islam, Christianity, and adjoining a depolarization happened, is what it was. And wow. I've always loved that story. So as you mentioned, it was my model as I have traveled to many countries at war, Iraq, Bosnia, and shared the peace concert where I put the 12 major religion peace prayers to music. And in many countries where wars were raging around me, I felt very much like Francis might have felt. But each time, I met beautiful people, like, you know, all of us, and people who want the same thing for their children that we want for our children. So I think that's where the whole desire to help with depolarization began. And if you'd like, I'll tell you the story of how the book came about, too, because It was one of those stories. Beginning of COVID, my younger brother loves to argue with me, and one day we're talking, and I think I felt he was winning the argument. So I said three things to him. I said, "Kenny, I don't know. Maybe I love you." And the argument just stopped, and he said later, "How can I keep this argument going when you say that?" And that's the whole point. So that's the title of the book. I don't know, maybe I love you. And I think it's a formula. It's a formula for how we can depolarize, as you said, our families, our businesses, our country, and the world.
Right. And I added to that ourselves, because within ourselves, we argue with ourselves. Maybe, no.
Absolutely. That's where it has to begin, within my own mind. Because anything that I'm judging outside of me is really within me somewhere, hiding, projecting itself onto the unlucky person or situation. So if I'm in a situation where someone says something or does something that I have a strong reaction to, the first place to look is within me. Like, where am I acting like? Where do I believe those things? Or how am I acting out similar patterns? And if I can heal it within myself, what happens is it brings me to a place of peace. It brings me to a place of helpfulness where I can then join with that person who may have a very different idea of whatever. Maybe they vote for a different candidate or they have a different attitude toward whatever issue. Because I've dealt with the issue within me, it takes the pressure off, it lowers the heat, and we can join at a level that we probably wouldn't have been able to before.
So the book takes us through your journey from that conversation through to many conversations. Boy, you're bold, by the way.
I've been told that, yeah.
Oh, this is not a new thing. Well,
Yeah.
actually, going into war-torn countries, it's actually, if I remember correctly, I was in a country and I was trying to get into another country. I didn't know they were at war at the time. I had been away from America for so long and the news that I didn't know there was a war. I couldn't get in. How did you get in?
Well, I'll give you one example. My first book, which was called Emissary of Light, came out in 1997, and I was on a book tour in the UK. I was on a radio program just like this, and it's a very, very, very popular show. I was actually told that the host was someone not to be toyed with, and that he kicks people off his show or he gets whatever it might be.
Okay.
And so this was right at a time when the US and its allies were right on the brink of another war with Iraq. And I just said, just off the top of my head, I said, what I'd like to do is go to Iraq and sing the Muslim prayer of peace to Saddam Hussein. Maybe if we just pray together.
Oh,
Well, it
wow.
turned out that the Iraqi ambassador to Great Britain was listening to that show. Next morning, I get a phone call saying, did you mean that? Well, next thing I knew,
Wow.
I was on an airplane. You couldn't fly into Baghdad, but I flew into Amman, Jordan, took a 12-hour taxi drive through the desert to get to Baghdad. Now, here's a very interesting thing. My first steps onto Iraqi soil. We arrived at the El Rashid Hotel, beautiful hotel. And as I step out, I notice at the entrance of the hotel, there is this huge mosaic. And in the middle is a particular person's face. And he has a weird sort of grimace on his face. And as people walk in, they spit on him. And I realize that's George Bush
Oh, wow.
and George Bush Sr. And so I thought, wow, I've really arrived in Oz. This is a very different place. But at the same time, everyone I met, they were so much like us. They wanted the same thing for their families that we want for our own. And I performed the concert in the National Theater there. It was broadcast on national television. And when the concert was over, they took me to a big party, and all we did was sit around singing Simon and Garfunkel songs. So
Oh.
it just goes to show.
Wow. Just goes to show. So the journey in the book points the way to individual action that puts empathy and love before the need to be right and the validation of our beliefs. Now, I have to say that need to be right thing In the book, you say something about breaking the addiction to be right. And when I read that, I thought, wow, addiction to be right.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's an addiction. I call it the pandemic of being right.
Wow.
That's the real pandemic, especially since the COVID pandemic. Everyone has their side, their belief. That's why the book is called I Don't Know, Maybe I Love You, because the truth is, I don't know. And neither do you, none of us know for sure anything. I have my beliefs, you have your beliefs. But maybe if I listen to you, maybe I'm going to learn something that I wouldn't have known before. All I know for sure is that unless we have a foundation of love and understanding, we're not going to get anywhere. So in the book, I'm just traveling. I was on the East Coast on a concert tour, and I drove straight down from New Hampshire to New York, Pennsylvania, and then all the way across the country as I went back to Portland, Oregon, and just talking to people and listening to them, being curious. That's one of the most important depolarization tools, actually, to be curious, to ask someone, how did you come to that belief? Even someone who has a completely different belief system than I do. One example would be the morning I started writing the book, I was in a town called North Conway, New Hampshire. And I'm having coffee in a cafe, and I look out, and there's, well, by the way, this is right before the 2024 election. And there's a man with his car just filled with Trump posters. And he's holding a sign that says, vote Trump or else. I thought, well, here we go. I'm gonna go talk to this guy. But more than talking, I'm going to listen to him. So I walked up. He was expecting a battle from a left-wing guy. And instead, I said, I'm just curious. Tell me more about your belief and your dedication to Donald Trump. And you could see the confusion in his eye when he said, okay, I'll do that. And when I didn't attack him, when I didn't try and change him, he finally said, well, tell me how you feel. And so I did. I said, well, I don't feel the same way you do, X, Y, and Z. And I started to share. And we had a beautiful conversation. And this is a conversation that could have gone south very, very quickly. And it just goes to show, when we're curious about another person and we're there more to unify rather than to separate or to be right.
Yeah.
If we're there to listen, magic can happen.
You, speaking of magic, when you and I were speaking earlier, you used the word art and artfully. Share how what you just described, actually, this conversation, how there was art in there that we may have forgotten or never knew.
Yeah, and it's strange that these types of conversations are a kind of art now. Because it used to be easy, you know? You didn't agree with me, okay, well, I don't agree with you, and that's, let's go back to playing ball or watching TV or whatever we're doing. Now it's very different. And so to be able to engage in a conversation with someone who has a different opinion and yet not to have it get heated to the point that we throw each other out of our lives, it's a kind of art. And it has things like being curious. Actually, all the things that I write about in the book, all the tools for depolarization, are things we learned in kindergarten. You know, how to listen to each other, how to be kind, how to respect. If we could just remember what we learned when we were 5 years old, you know, that is art. And very few of us are social artists in that way. And if we can be more artful in the way that we have conversations or deal with people who don't agree with us, we're going to learn a lot about ourselves. We're going to learn a lot about that other person. Like, let me give you one example, actually, a funny one. So a number of years ago, I guess it was in 2017, I, believe it or not, was on Match.com. And I met a woman, wonderful woman, and we had a few phone conversations, and then we went out to dinner. And I tell you, Filippo, it was one of the best first dates of my life. And we went on a second date, and it was even better. And then on the third date, she said, I need to tell you something. And my kids told me I shouldn't tell you, but I feel like I have to. And I said, there's nothing you can tell me that's going to change the way I feel about
Famous last words.
it. Yeah. So she looked at me square in the eye and she said, I love Donald Trump. Now, there may be people out there listening right now who love Donald Trump. That's great. All I can say is that my first words were, what? This woman seemed like a typical Portlandian. She seemed very liberal, but I was surprised. But luckily, I didn't react. I asked her a few questions. I asked her to tell me why. What is it that you resonate? Well, it turned out that when she was very young, she and her sister lived with their father. And the father worked in a prison system. And he would sometimes, when a man was transitioning out of prison and didn't have a proper place to go, he would let them stay there at their house with two young girls. And some bad things happened. And so she blamed her father, who was very liberal, who was very giving. She blamed him for being weak. And she therefore saw Donald Trump as someone who was strong, was going to protect them in a way that her father couldn't. So understanding that story, because I was curious, it helped me have compassion for her. And I think that this is the key: curiosity, questions, instead of just jumping down someone's throat, say, how can you possibly believe that? To listen to them, I don't know, maybe I love you. It works like magic.
You ended up learning many other things about her, some deep things
Yeah.
that
She was
she
a
might
beautiful
not have come out
person.
and shared.
But you know, the other thing is, I didn't want to throw her out of my life just because we voted for different people. So I felt that if we can find humor in this, if we can laugh at this, I think we'd be okay. So we did go out on one more date, and I think I made some sort of a small crack about Fox News. And I realized
And
she
that was
wasn't ready.
it,
That was it, yeah.
That's how the date ended.
Yep.
Well, interestingly enough, I was going to, I don't know how this segues, but I was going to say that when I read this phrase, humility and confidence are cousins, I had to read it again and I thought, I'm going to ask James to explain that because that goes deep too.
Yeah, I believe that when we're confident in who we really are. Not the image, not the identity, not the mask, but there's something deeper. And when we have a confidence in that solid ground beneath us, the reality, which isn't maybe another way of describing love, then humility is the natural result. You can look at most of the greatest spiritual teachers, and they were very, very humble. Teachers who are full of themselves, who tout their own greatness or whatever it might be, it's very surface. Their message touches people on the surface, but it doesn't go deep to that place where the truth lives. So I've just always found that, and once again, Saint Francis of Assisi is my model for this. He went from being the richest man in town to standing naked in front of the whole town, giving all of his money away. And the first thing he did was he went and he served at a leper colony. So he went from being this grandiose guy to a man of pure service or pure humility. I've always tried to model, I try, but I'm not always successful, but to try and model myself after that.
Well, that's a lot. And actually, that ties into what I was going to say. It was very refreshing when I picked up the book and started reading it. And right away, you quoted Christ, you quoted the Bible, and I think Saint Francis as well. And I thought that's refreshing from a New York Times best-selling author. I haven't read all. I mean, of course, the Moses Code. Of course, that's from the Bible and biblical. But it just feels like in this particular moment that that's something that either wants to come in, or there's not enough of, or it's just refreshing.
Well, I think you're right. And whether you are a follower of Jesus or not, or a practicing another religion or not at all, It all still comes down to my willingness to love you no matter what. That's the key. And that may be the hardest thing for us because we've been conditioned to love the people who agree with us or the people who see the world the same way we do. And if they don't, especially today, well, that's reason enough to throw them out. But Christ and all the great teachers call us to love our enemy, to do good to those who hate us, bless those who curse us. And what really is hardest for me these days, Filippo, is are people, you know, as a priest, people who call themselves Christians and really put that out there, but they do and believe the exact opposite. That's very frustrating to me, and it boggles my mind of how they don't see that what they believe is the exact opposite of what we were taught. So for me, I can't change anyone but myself. It actually drives me to try to love even deeper and to try and practice these artful things that, once again, we learned in kindergarten. And if we can apply them to our lives today, especially when we meet someone who doesn't agree with us or voted for a different candidate or whatever it may be. Oh, and the other thing is that people often ask, well, what are the driving forces? And one of them is social media. Social media, the algorithms are constantly telling us what we already believe to reinforce our desire and our need to be right. So, for example, if I'm anti-vax, the social media platforms know that because of other things that I've clipped on. Therefore, it's going to give me a lot of that. It's going to give me all the doctors, all the experts who agree with me. So it's very easy for me to say, well, I must be right. Everybody I trust believes me and says the same thing. But if I was pro-vax, the opposite would happen. And that would just be polarizing the other way. So we have to wean ourselves from this need. And as we said before, the addiction to being right and realizing that I can be happy instead of being right. And I'm happy only when I treat people with respect, I listen to them, and don't put changing them in the forefront. Just put loving them first.
I, of course, knew that about search engines and social media, for that matter, and advertisement and all that stuff. But I think in your book was the first time that I've heard it referred to as the echo chamber, which talk to us a little bit more about the echo chamber, because we also are accustomed to that in our lives, right? With other people.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. I yell something out and then I hear it come right back to me, but it's my voice. Mm. It may be coming from a doctor or some expert, but the algorithms are trained and designed to tell me what I already believe. So it's constantly echoing back and forth, but it's my own voice that I'm hearing. And once again, it reinforces that need to be right. I say screw being right. You know what? Half the time I'm right, I'm usually wrong anyway. So I'm not going to worry about being right. I would just prefer to listen to people. And well, actually, I have a credo, Filippo, which is, number one, I don't care who you voted for. Come and walk with me. I don't care what side you are on, left, right, conservative, liberal. Come and serve with me. Mm. You know, there's nothing you can say that's going to change the way I love you. And if we could all live something similar to that, all of these issues, all of this depolarization, the polarization is going to fade on its own.
So I take that this is part of the creed of the I Don't Know movement. Tell us more about it.
Well, as you said, we're hoping to spark a whole movement of people around the world who say, I want to be a depolarizing agent. So it begins, if you want to get the book, I Don't Know, Maybe I Love You, you can buy it on Amazon or anywhere else. But we also encourage you to go to the website, which is de-polarize.com. So it's depolarize with a dash. And there's a 1-minute survey that you can take there that will help us to really design this movement. And I just say to everyone, be part of the change. Be the change you want to see in the world. And one of the ways we can do that is by learning the skills of curiosity and listening and remembering all those things that we learned in kindergarten, applying them to our lives, especially at the times when it's most difficult.
What would be the first thing we could do that's the easiest thing we could do tonight after we've listened to you?
Maybe think of someone in your life that you have come up against in a disagreement, in an argument. Maybe this person said they don't want to talk to you or be part of your life, or maybe you said that to them. Maybe just this evening, begin by thinking about that person and feel into it. See, feel any of the emotions and the gut feeling that you have. But don't just project it onto that person. Take a deep breath and look within and say, where am I being stubborn? Where am I being off to the side and not listening and not respecting? And maybe I can look there first, look within my own heart first, because if I have a reaction, especially a strong reaction, it's in me, right? So begin there, and then maybe tomorrow call up that person and just say, hey, what you doing? Can we have a chat? I'd like to listen to you. And resist the urge to tell them what you believe until they ask. If they don't ask, don't tell them. But listen to them. And I promise you, if you do that, there's going to be something that happens there. The heat's going to go down. You're going to find a connection that maybe you thought you lost. And more than likely, they're going to give you the opportunity to share what you believe as well.
Thank you for that. Well, before we close, actually, do we also want to give another website? Do you want to give the
Sure.
jamesftwyman.com?
Yeah. Then if they want more information on me, jamesftwyman.com. That's Twyman. The books and everything else, and just a little bit more information about me. But more than anything, I say join this movement. Let's get this baby going so we can once and for all bring back a sense of normalcy and equality.
If you go to the Life Changes show page for James F. Twyman, you'll also find the links and a song there, the Wandering Soul that James is singing. But from that link, you could find his YouTube channel and see many of his songs and many other things that he's posted there on the YouTube channel. There's another question I want to ask you before we go, but anything you want to say about the YouTube channel before I
No, go
ask?
check it out. I'm actually coming to you from Mexico, where I started a spiritual community, an
Yes.
community, and we have morning sessions here every day that we put on Zoom and then YouTube. So if you went to it's Namaste Village morning session there at YouTube, all of our sessions are going to come up, and they're just wonderful. Having the chance to join with hundreds of people around the world every morning is such a refreshing thing for me and for all of us.
And this is people from all over.
Yeah, people from all over the world live here. We have about 40 houses or apartments, and they're almost always full.
Wonderful. So what I was going to say as we were bringing this wonderful conversation to a close, that all of it, the title, I don't know, has been considered weak, maybe has been considered wishy-washy. And I love you is not something that we're comfortable saying to a lot of people, if anybody, right? Some of us. What the when someone wants to appear strong, they might think they have to have an answer. They right they I don't know. So you're in the movement, in the book, in what you're sharing with us, you're potentially saying this is actually not weakness, but strength.
Yeah, you know, these truths are usually reversed. That which we think makes us strong is usually what makes us weak, and that which we think is weak makes us strong. So many spiritual traditions and teachers talk about living in the I don't know, which is really about being less constrained with the need to be right and just be more open to the energy, listening to people. And that's what brings us to the maybe. Maybe there's something that you have that I need. And it may sound like weakness to some people, but it brings us to a place of solid ground. And So I just say, okay, whatever, practice it, see what it feels like. And I think you're going to find that living in the I don't know and the maybe and the I love you is not weakness at all, but it's probably the strongest you're ever going to feel in your life.
Wonderful. And in the book, we'll end on this, but in the book, you didn't feel comfortable saying, I love you
Yeah, well, sometimes.
to somebody. Which is a great moment in the book. So, anyone
Sometimes
want
I just think it. You can say, I don't know, maybe, and then think, I love you.
Nice. Nice. I like it. I like it. I like this conversation so much. Thank you, James, for the book, for what you're doing, what you're sharing, and you're continuing being the peace troubadour in many different forms, it sounds.
Yes, I think that's probably what I'll be for the rest of my life, spreading peace through music and compassion.
Wonderful. Well, we look forward to more, and let's give the websites out again, shall we?
Sure. If you want to go to the book website is de-polarize.com, and you can fill out the 1 minute survey that we have there. And if you want more information on me, jamesftwyman.com.
And of course, all his other books, The Moses Code and The Barn Dance and all the others as well, which have been translated in 24 languages. Sure, you're sure to find it in yours, most likely, if you're looking. So with that, James, all the best to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Filippo. It's been a pleasure.
My pleasure too as well. Ciao, ciao. And with that, we have our Ask Dorothy segment.
Dear Dorothy, this is Maria, and I need your help once again. Every day I see messages online predicting 10 days of darkness, and I'm very frightened. I live alone and don't have a clue as to how to take care of myself if I were to be without power or without any way to connect with others. Please help me.
Precious Maria. You're not alone in feeling scared. It's completely normal to be anxious when you see alarming messages online, especially about things that feel mysterious or out of your control. However, what is important is to remember that we can prepare and that there may be fear-mongering and there may be truth-telling, but we need to be discerning and be prepared. After all, having food in the house, knowing neighbors, having an escape route, knowing where to meet someone if you can, these were things taught to us years ago, and we need to have them planned now. Please understand that the idea of 10 days of darkness is a phrase that originated many years ago from conspiracy theories circulating online. Many people share these kinds of messages because they are fearful and they have not researched the possibility of it being true. However, what is truly important here is for you to know that you are not powerless. Even though the 10 days idea may or may not be real, it's still a good idea to be prepared for short-term emergencies. Here are some practical steps to help you feel safer and more prepared in case of emergency. In today's world, it is always a good idea to have basic supplies for a week or more if you prefer. 1 gallon of water per day is a good start, so 2 5-gallon jugs could be helpful. The next necessity is food, canned food, peanut butter, crackers, granola bars, things you can eat without cooking. And you'll have to have a manual can opener. Flashlights and extra batteries, candles and matches, phone power banks are also good to have on hand. And Maria, since you live in an apartment complex and if you haven't connected with your neighbors now, is a good time to do so. It is also important to keep a written list of emergency contacts, family, friends, local emergency services. If you have a battery-powered radio, you can get updates even without internet. And please keep some cash on hand in case card readers go down. I know you take a few medications, so please make sure you have at least a week's worth ready and on hand. If you feel overwhelmed, know that you don't need to do everything all at once. Start with just 1 or 2 steps today. Maybe filling a bag with canned food, getting your water, or checking your flashlight. Most importantly, let's remember that you aren't actually alone. You are a strong and powerful being, and it is most important that you step out of the fear zone into faith, trust, and knowing that you are powerful and that you have loving friends who will help you. If there are ever going to be any days of darkness, plan what you want to do, whose place you will go to, or who will come to yours if they can. What friends do you have nearby? Have you gotten to know and be friendly with your neighbors? If not, please do so now. What we do know is that we can prepare and that there may be fear-mongering and there may be truth-telling, but to take what we need into consideration, let's be discerning and be prepared. After all, having food in the house, knowing neighbors, having an escape route, knowing where to meet someone if you can, these are things you can prepare yourself for. There are also people and services ready to help. If you ever feel unsafe or if the fear is affecting your day-to-day life, talk to someone, a friend, a neighbor, or a therapist, or let me know and I can help you find a local helpline or support service. I'm here for you always.
Thank you, Dorothy. And if you have a question for Dorothy, don't wait for 10 Days of Darkness. Write her now at AskDorothy@LifeChangesShow.com.
And it's time for our performance segment. And we are featuring a TV, film, and concert composer and arranger, a pianist whose work has been featured in hit shows as Breaking Bad, JAG, My Boys, Parks and Recreation, and House, and so much more. And he's here to present some new music to us, brand new music. We're happy to welcome Bevan Manson to the Life Changes Show. Welcome, Bevan. Bevan, you're there. You go.
Hi. Hi there. Yeah, sorry about that.
No worries. You were eating the pretzels.
I had a pretzel in my mouth as we spoke.
I knew it.
Well,
I should say I've known Bevan for many years, thanks to both Peter Yandua Hudson, my friend, who first introduced me to Jenny Hansen, your wife. Is that okay to say?
Sure, why not?
Who then introduced me to you. I have to say, and we'll get into this in a little bit, but if it hadn't been for your wife, I never would have made it through the being able to sing on your record. So we'll talk more about that in a moment. But back to you. Bevan, I had the pleasure of getting to interview you on the Life Changes Show many, many years ago. And I feel like so much has changed in the world, as we've been talking about on the show today, but in our bodies, everything. How has your music changed over the last, let's say, 5-6 years even?
Well, I think it's quite serendipitous that you had James Twyman on earlier. I love the guy. And the reason I'm saying that it's serendipitous, which is easier to say than spell, is that over the last 5 or 6 years, while I have written a lot of music, especially concert music for classical groups, orchestras, and chamber groups, as well as jazz groups, I've also felt the need to put it simply, write music that has a social message, that tries not to preach to the choir or tries not to be condescending, but just sort of states the problem and what can we do about it. And of course, as I said, you know, James, through his actions, you know, has tried to, you know, reach out to create more peaceful situations. And that's been one of my concerns too. I find it a challenge, you know, to bring people together who might have very polarized views. And there are some people who don't, you know, at least initially don't want to change. But I've always felt that music is a way of bringing people together And if it can be, whether it's sung or played instrumentally, that if there is an underlying message, again, without being trying to be persuasive, but just, again, stating the problem and trying to make us feel something through music, through the miracle of especially acoustic sound, the beauty of it, perhaps the beauty of it can, you know, have the make the lion lie down with the lamb, so to speak. These two new recordings, relatively new recordings that you're going to play excerpts from, both deal with certain things socially, ask a lot of questions, but again, the beauty of the sound, of course, is paramount. And I have to say that, you know, I wouldn't want to go around making speeches or writing books. I'm not that kind of person. I have to express myself through music.
Right.
And I just hope that people will feel something when they hear it. And so maybe that just makes them just, at least, as James was saying, slightly more open when they're approached, you know, if not with words of love, but with music of love.
That's beautiful, Bevan.
As Shakespeare said, if music be the food of love, then play on. So yes. I'm playing on, you know?
Well, thank you for that. Thank you. And right, you, I've missed your playing. You performed in Los Angeles, and actually just a couple weeks ago, I was out of town, but was it the Long Beach Symphony Orchestra was premiering one of your pieces?
That was the Symphonic Jazz Orchestra, the SJO, which is a great Los Angeles orchestra. It's just top-notch orchestra. They get things done extremely quickly. And yes, they premiered a piece of mine, and it was very nice to not have to play, just to be able to sit back
and enjoy along with the audience. Well, I'm going to get to do the same thing. Actually, we're going to radio premiere, a song that has not even been released yet. The album is When the Cup is Lifted. It's not out yet, but it's coming out in a week.
Yeah.
In a week. Right. It's very exciting, in about a week. And then this piece we're going to hear is called Theme from a Gleam, which is very clever and very poetic. Tell us anything you want to tell us. We're only going to get to hear the first 2 minutes of it here, and then you'll have to check it out when it comes out. But tell us, what is Theme from a Gleam?
Well, this piece is from the album When the Cup is Lifted. And Theme for a Gleam.
Oh, sorry. Theme for a Gleam
is just a little bit about a ray of hope. I just was being sort of metaphysical, and it's kind of a simple. It starts out anyway as kind of a simple lyrical, partly I guess hard to call it what it is exactly, but perhaps partly bossa nova, partly what we in jazz call a jungle beat, a little bit. And it's meant to evoke some peaceful feelings. And it does get into some pretty lively action with the soloing. But the melody itself, I feel, is very peaceful and a little sad, a little reflective. I wrote it at a time of a lot of personal strife going on, and it's been played by a number of groups, but in this orchestration on this record, it's featuring the alto flute of one of my favorite flutists in Los Angeles, Sarah Anden. Also my piano playing and the great bass playing of Luca Alamano.
Wow.
Young Italian bass player, probably.
Oh, yes.
In some way. And
You called me your favorite Italian.
Well, he's my second favorite. I have quite a few, actually. I've always had so many friends of Italian heritage. I'm not sure why, but
I don't have to be your favorite. No, to worry. I am happy to be your friend, and I'm happy that we're going to get to do this. Here is a theme for A Gleam from When the Cup is Lifted, pre-recorded. Bevan Manson's music radio premiered here on the Life Changes Show. Was too short. What a cut. Right in the middle of your solo. Bevan Manson. If you're liking what you're hearing, you can go to Bevan Manson, just like it sounds, .online. BevanManson online, or .online. And then if you go to Life Changes Show, we also have a few links to YouTube channels, because you could find them there. And we also have an actual YouTube video posted right there. Bevan, is there any other social link we need to give out?
Sure. The album actually is now available, of course, in a pre-save fashion on all the usual suspects, Amazon and Spotify, that sort of thing. But it's also available in a more complete form on the record label, Meistero Music, which is spelled Meistero Music, Music, which is to be found on Bandcamp. It's a very nice little record label that offers some really wonderful jazz. I have two albums on it, actually. This is the second one. Also, Filippo, I should explain, the title of the album, When the Cup is Lifted, is, again, it's serendipitous that James was your guest earlier, because When the Cup is Lifted, I lifted, actually, from a poem by one of my favorite poets in Los Angeles, Mandy Kahn, K-A-H-N, coincidentally teaches a piece class every Wednesday online, and writes a lot about bringing people together one way or the other. And she's sort of like the poet who sort of in her poetry allows for conflict resolution somehow. Very, very interesting poet. And When the Cup is Lifted refers to when people of opposing faiths get together who are particularly feeling antagonistic towards each other.
Wow.
When they just get together for a meal, and when everybody is sharing common food and is able to, you know, lift a cup, drink together, it's another way where the heat tends to go down. And I was very inspired by this, and so a lot of the album is sort of devoted towards conflict and the resolution of it. There's a lot of pieces that are concerned with that. There's a very long anti-war piece called The Blood Price that I wrote quite a while ago, but just got released on this album, that features about 100 different musicians, one way or the other, not all together at the same time, but talking about, again, how to resolve the problem of war, in that it's necessary to find out why it starts in the first place, and to figure that out. Mm. So that's Wonderful. What that album is about in a nutshell. It is a jazz album, but it has a lot of classical musicians on it. Wonderful players from Los Angeles, not just Sarah, but many, many others. The jazz saxophonists, Bob Shepard and Danny Janklow.
Oh, wow.
And the Hollywood Bowl English horn player, Catherine Del Russo.
Yes.
quite a few. I mean, there's actually 76 musicians on this.
Wow. Album. Wow. So, well, that is awesome. Well, and that's jazz. And we're going to be switching gears for the next piece, at least. But before we go there, I have to ask you, because I know you like to talk on the subject, and we'll only really have a minute for it here. Maybe we'll have more time another time, but the importance of live music, especially now, with everything that we've talked about, and after the whole COVID thing, where people weren't going out, weren't hearing live music, and also including, in your words, the ever over digitalized environment.
Yes. Well, I'm a firm believer, I guess since I was a little kid, the magic of the acoustic sound, the instruments, if you get close up enough, if you get up close to them enough, and in many formal situations, it's sometimes a little difficult, but if you get up close to them enough so that the audience is in fact one with the musicians, one with the performance, and you actually are able to experience the sound in terms of its proximity coming at you just from the heart and the mind and the bodies of the musicians doing these miraculous things with instruments that speak, that have a voice of their own. You can learn things that you can't learn in language. Music is perhaps another language, but it says things that languages cannot say, and it certainly brings people together. But I'm a particular believer in the acoustic sound of it, the magic of it, that for instance, I mean, just on a pragmatic level, it's been proven that it's just very healthy to hear those natural sound waves coming at you from, say, a cello or a violin or a drum set, you know, because not only are they made by a human being, but the instrument itself, like I said, has its own voice. It speaks. It has a personality, and it says things with the help of the human that's playing it that, again, that you don't necessarily get in words.
Well, speaking of saying things with the help of a human, at trees. So your next album is titled Talking to Trees, which, wow, very deep. That came from you?
Yes, that actually came from me. And I'm a big believer in the there's a Japanese art called forest bathing, which is simply a way to walk in the woods. Japan is a country that's two-thirds forest, and so there's a tradition there of walking in the woods to unplug yourself from, the digital or overly digitalized world that we live in.
And maybe even our brain.
Right, exactly. And I've always experienced this myself. I'm a big nature lover. I need to unplug from just everyday life a lot. And so I'm lucky that there's a really beautiful area of woods close by our house, and I can lose myself there. And whether or not you believe this or not, I mean, trees are very complex creatures. They have a very complex relationship with the earth and organisms that live in the earth, and these organisms kind of cooperate with the tree, not just fungi, but also all kinds of others. And so there's a lot of conversation going on, and I fancy, in a certain way, if I'm alone and there's enough silence in the woods, I can hear a little bit of that, and it takes you out of yourself. And so I fancied myself someday actually talking to trees. I don't know if that's possible or not, but the pieces on this album, which are featuring the great jazz vocalist from LA, Tierney Sutton, as well as
Yes.
many other vocalists, tend to lean towards appreciation of trees. And again, I sometimes, perhaps I'm preaching to the choir a little bit about, their fragility, but how important they are to us. We certainly can't breathe without them. They, along with grasses and bushes, they provide the air that we actually survive in. So they're kind of
Wow.
important to us in that sort of mundane respect, but also just spiritually, they have a lot to offer. So the piece you're going to hear, a little bit of it anyway, is called Sprig Spring. That's a title of mine. This piece that I wrote is quite lengthy, so we're just going to hear a bit of it. And I think you have it divided into two parts.
Correct.
The first part features Tierney and also quite a few other vocalists, including yourself.
Correct.
And they.
And I have to say, I know you know so many vocalists and are a fan of vocalists and the voice. And I was so honored when you asked me and delighted. But I'm glad I made it onto the record. So thank you for
Yes,
having asked
you did right, and I'm going to ask you again sometime in the future.
Okay.
So you can start being worried right now.
Okay, it would be my pleasure. But please, you were saying.
Well, no, I'm just saying it's a combination of a lot of different kinds of music. It's kind of a theatrical piece, jazz, classical, and a little perhaps music theater. And it tries to tell a little bit of a story. I hope that's evident in the little bits that is played. But actually, there's two stories. One is of two lovers in the woods, and the other is just talking about the trees and the dangers that they face. It's quite a long piece, actually. I know you're just going to play some excerpts, but I just
Right.
want to mention, besides Tierney Sutton, who is, of course, one of the most detailed and evocative jazz singers around. There are quite a few other singers here, too many to mention, but besides yourself, Catherine Liner, a wonderful studio
Oh.
singer from LA, and Devon Davidson,
No.
Matthew Lewis. There's a few more, but I'll let you go ahead and play it. I also should mention that there's wonderful woodwind work from some of the finest studio musicians, concert musicians in LA, including Donald Foster, Nancy Matheson, quite a few others. And of course, a jazz rhythm section also spices things up quite a lot. That's Luca Alamano again, and Steve Haas, and some other players as well.
Great players.
Yeah, and there are quite a few.
And yes, we're going to, it's about a 15-minute piece, I think, right? Or 16. Yes. And so we've got two pieces. We're going to play them back to back with maybe like 3 seconds in between, and we'll fade in, fade out. Actually, we're going to start at the very, very top of the piece. And thank you for picking the parts that also include me. And this will be my first time hearing this. The record is out, Talking to Trees. You can get it now, and it's been out for a few months, but I haven't had a chance. And when you sent it to me, I thought, I'm going to get to hear it. It'll be my premiere for myself. I'm going to get to hear it with this audience. Here it is. Excerpts of Bevan Manson's Sprig Spring. That's one word. Interesting. From Talking to Trees, pre-recorded here on the Life Changes Show.
Can there be love without the spring that burst in season? And how can there be spring without them budding trees a-breezing? The young and blooming couple starts to love so much faster when spring goes zing from asters into happy ever afters. Thank you.
Oh, and there it is, Bevan Manson. Wow, Bevan, the composition, but you're playing too. That was amazing.
Yes, thanks. Yeah, well, I was ably assisted by Luca Alamano and Kendall Kay, actually, on drums there. Mm. And the great drummer Joe LaBarbera appeared briefly earlier. But you heard Tierney Sutton.
Yes, good on her. Beautiful.
You heard yourself. You heard Devin Davidson, Leslie Sultanian, Matthew Lewis, and quite a few woodwind players, including the great clarinetist Jeff Newdell. I mentioned Nancy Matheson, Don Foster, a number of other folks too. But
you're I know so we're gracious going to run out of time in a minute.
But, yeah,
you're so gracious to name them all.
Well, I try. A few saxophonists to Damon Zick, I'm probably leaving someone out here, but at any rate, the record's available again on the usual suspect venues, Amazon and Spotify, and Apple Music.
And that's called Talking to Trees.
Talking to Trees, yeah.
And I look forward to going back and listening to the whole piece and the whole album, and I'm ready for the whole musical.
Yeah, it actually kind of works that way, because the album, being a composer, even in these little excerpts that you played just now, there's a lot of motivic relationships.
Yeah.
The whole album is kind of like that. It's not just subject matter wise, but there's a lot of little musical relationships from one track to the other. So it's a bit symphonic that way, but also a lot of jazz soloing and vocal appearances. So it's quite a combination of things.
Well, I know you don't rest and you're already working on something else, but we'll hopefully get to talk about that another time. But in the meantime, thank you for sharing all of this with us here on the Life Changes Show.
Thank you, Filippo.
It's been a great pleasure. So a big thank you to Bevan Manson, and a big thank you to our guest, James Twyman. And with that, that is our show. On behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, and our executive producer and co-host, Mark LeJour, I am your host, Filippo Voltaggio, reminding you that as your life changes, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at The Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.